Chapter 3. The Africa Shrine, Ikeja, Lagos, Nigeria, June 20th, 1977, 11:46 p.m. Ardit Kumar was sitting on an uncomfortable metal chair close to the raised stage at the far end of a courtyard, surrounded by low buildings. Above, the sky was a dark purple, illuminated by a bright half-moon. The evening air was humid and fragrant. Assorted foods, vaporized palm oil, perfume, sweat, cheap beer and smoke. It all combined to saturate the air with a heady mix of lust, freedom and marijuana. He was at a cheap, unstable table, barely held together by rusty nails and the efforts of an unskilled carpenter. A half-eaten bowl of pepper soup, a mostly eaten plate of suya, and three tall brown empty bottles of Gulda beer were sloppily spread in front of him like reluctant offerings. Everything around him vibrated, including his own head, pulsating with the loud music and the rising rush of alcohol. Up on the makeshift stage, where a yellow-painted board spelled out the words Fela Kuti and the Africa 70, in dark blue letters, a thin shirtless man in tight trousers with chalk markings on his face sang into the microphone while simulating sex with a sweaty, skinny woman in a gold miniskirt and bra, cowrie shell bangles shaking around her ankles and wrists. Fela's voice strained as he sang in pidgin. Ardit picked up a few words from the song, something about a woman who didn't like being called a woman and preferred to be addressed as a lady. An army of musicians played guitars, saxophones, drums, danced and sang backing vocals that echoed Fela's voice. It all looked like chaos to Ardit, but the resulting sounds were undeniably scintillating, and he unknowingly swayed his woolly, booze-addled head in time with it. He was glad he had taken his company driver's recommendation to come here, despite his initial reluctance to attend a concert in Lagos on his own. He'd even worn the protective gold chain and peacock feather that his mother, ever the religious woman, had given him at the airport before he left for this expat assignment, just in case. But his concerns had been unfounded. He was having a good time. The apparent musical mayhem on stage was reflected by the gathered audience, a few of whom were sitting and smoking around crowded, clumsy tables of their own, some of whom were standing, singing along and laughing. Many were dancing to the music and bumping into other swaying dancers in a veritable sea of dark, sweaty bodies. Fela kept singing about his African lady, just as a woman extricated herself from the crowd and made her way over to Ardit's table. She sat next to him and smiled. He stared back at her. His vision was not yet blurry enough from the booze to not immediately realize how stunningly beautiful she was. She had radiant ebony skin, like polished midnight, and the edges of her frizzy afro caught the stray bits of light from the array of hanging bulbs, like a halo. She seemed, in his mind, to be Africa made flesh. Dark, mysterious, and just a little bit dangerous. She started stroking Ardit's face with her long, sleek fingers, running them through his hair. Her touch sent a shiver down his spine. The song hit a high note. Stunned, Ardit tried to process what was happening. This beautiful woman had ignored every young nubile Nigerian here and had come to sit by him. The hairy man with the straight graying hair, gold chain, wedding ring, and an American accent. Ardit was wearing an Ankara shirt with khaki bell-bottoms, and he was the most out-of-place person there. He thought, charitably, that she had to be a very beautiful prostitute. His driver had told him that this was a good place to relax and find women to help him ease his loneliness, and so he let her continue to stroke his beard and smile at him as the space around them buzzed with electric lust. Fela continued to grind his hips against the dancer on stage, singing, moaning and laughing with fevered ebullience. Now, Fella sang that there was more to the woman who wanted to be called a lady. Ardit tried not to stare at her, but his eyes kept drifting to her face, her cleavage, and past her red tank top and leather miniskirt, to her gleaming brown thighs. Sweat slicked his palms and forehead. What felt like a dozen eternities passed, with her fingers teasing him. Ardit endured the aching in his loins until it became a mad pounding in the space behind his temples. "Do you want to find somewhere more private?" A short, nervous laugh caught in Ardit's throat as he tried to mask his embarrassment and the urgency of hot desire that had possessed him. She leaned in closer, letting her puff of hair brush against his face while her leg pressed against his. "Don't be shy. Tell me what you really want."
I want you."
He was unable to bear it any longer. "And you are willing to pay the price?" she asked. His guess must have been right.
"Yes, I'll pay anything."
She cooed.
"Say the words, then."
"I will pay your price."
"Are you sure?"
"Yes." She laughed sharply as the song went on. There was something else about the lady, according to Fella's song, but Ardit was no longer listening to the music. He started for the entrance, where his driver had dropped him off, but she pulled him away and back into the crowd. They pushed through the press of bodies until they were clear and entered a small building with crumbling and cracked walls behind the crowd. They navigated a maze of narrow, winding corridors until they exited through what looked like a kitchen, where a group of sweaty, heavy-set women, wearing an array of assorted Ankara wrappers, were turning large pots of rice, scooping up soft lumps of amala and ladling generous helpings of pepper soup into ceramic bowls. They gave Ardit and the woman dirty looks, but the woman pressed on, leading them away from the kitchen exit, slipping a thin old security guard with glazed eyes a few naira notes to walk away from his post and leading him down a dark, quiet alley behind the Africa shrine. When they were alone, she leaned against the brick wall of the alley. "Do you want me to start?" The way she asked made him feel like he had been set on fire.
"What's your name?" he asked.
"Noma," she replied. "You can call me Noma." He wanted to say her name, but wasn't sure he could mimic the sound she made correctly. So he took her face in his hands. Her lips were full and parted. Her breath was sweet, with a hint of the metallic on it. He drew her in for a kiss in the darkness, but she pulled back at the last moment, just as his lips were about to touch hers, and turned her head away. When she faced him again, he thought he saw a flash of yellow in her eyes.
"Let's be quick. I know what you really want," she whispered breathily.
And with that, she turned around, thrust her hips back, and hiked up her leather skirt. She reached back and slid her fingers expertly down his loose trousers. She seized him. Ardit could barely breathe. When she drew him into her, it felt like every nerve in his body had been saturated with pure pleasure. He braced himself against the wall, closed his eyes, and let out a deep moan. She continued to thrust her hips against him. Saxophone notes echoed around them. Time seemed to disappear as he drowned in her. A cornucopia of sensations overran him as images flitted through his mind like butterflies in a field. Birds, lips, music, flowers, wings, skin. He began to shake uncontrollably as an explosion of pleasure erupted within him. The feeling intensified as she moved against him, constantly cresting. He was close to release. He tried to open his eyes, but he couldn't focus his vision on anything through the blur of sensations, and so he shut them again. It felt like he was convulsing as he neared the peak, but then their faces appeared in his mind, as clear as though they had been projected onto a screen behind his eyelids. His wife, Sajka, and their 3-year-old son, Ravin, back in Mumbai,
playing in the backyard of his family home, laughing and calling for him. "Daddy, Daddy, come and play with us." The vision flooded him with a guilt even more intense than the pleasure he was feeling. Sachka. Ravin. No. He crashed back into coherence as his mind crystallized around the shame and guilt. I'm sorry, he mumbled as he clumsily pulled out and away from her. She turned and stared curiously at him. He struggled with his trousers as he withdrew a fistful of naira notes and thrust them at her. Noma looked first at the money, her lip curling with disgust, and then glared at him with eyes like dying coals. What is this? I'm sorry, I can't. I shouldn't have. I have a wife. This is your money. I have more, if you want, but I need to leave. I have a... Her voice took on the quality of an earthquake. What is all this nonsense? You think you can just stop now? You think this is the price? Your filthy money. Stupid man. There are things that money cannot buy. Do you understand? You agreed to my price. We had a deal. Ardit's guilt was being replaced by fear of equal magnitude, perhaps greater. He glanced at the ground and noticed that despite the faint light of the moon hitting them at the same angle, his shadow was alone. You will pay the price. Ardit realized with all the abruptness of tropical rainfall that he had made a horrible mistake with something that was not quite human. Driven by a wild, mad need to escape, he snatched the gold chain hanging around his neck, removed the small peacock feather hanging from it that his mother had often told him would protect him from evil, and threw it at her. Noma hopped back to avoid it like it was toxic, but her back hit the wall and she fell awkwardly. Ardit took his chance and fled for the entrance and the car park beyond. There was a piercing scream, followed by tremulous cackling behind him, tainting the saxophone echoes in the air like black paint spilled on fine silk. Ardit kept running. He did not look back.